This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll get a preview of Cirque Mechanics coming to Cincinnati later this week. But first, on March 30th, CET and other PBS stations will start airing a new six-hour Ken Burns production, Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies. The documentary is based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Emperor of All Maladies, a biography of cancer by Siddhartha Mukherjee, and takes a detailed look at one of our most dreaded diseases. Joining us for a preview of the film and to discuss what we know and don't know about cancer are physicians with the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute, Dr. Rebecca Cornelius, Dr. John Morris, and Dr. Tom Herzog. And good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom, what do you think of the title of the documentary, Emperor of All Maladies? Why is cancer the emperor of all maladies?
Well, it goes back, it has an incredibly long history, which is one of the really interesting things that the book and the documentary cover. It goes all the way back to the ancient Egyptians, that they saw this. And of course, they didn't know what it was. They knew it was a growth that was out of control. But it's gone through a series of different, thoughts as to what the etiology may be, including an imbalance in the humors of the body and the number of spirits that have invaded the body and so forth. So, it can cause a lot of different diseases, in its different forms, and therefore it became the emperor of all maladies.
You're talking about the history goes way, way back. Didn't the Greeks also take note of it? And that's where the name cancer comes from. It was a Greek word for,
both
crab.
Both cancer and tumor are derived from Greek. And, the Greeks, described the tumor as it actually translates as swelling or growth. And, cancer because the cancer sending out its tendrils into the tissues invading gave them the appearance of being, like a crab reaching out.
Rebecca, cancer is, it's just extremely prevalent. It's hard to find anyone who hasn't been touched by it. Either someone in their family had it or they had it personally. Is cancer as prevalent as it seems?
Well, yes, it really is. And, certainly in a referral center like the university, maybe we have a little bit of a biased view and we see more cancer than perhaps at some other institutions, but, it's very prevalent, affecting different parts of the body. I work in the field of radiology and imaging of cancer, so a lot of our work is directed at the initial diagnosis and then the follow-up imaging for assessing response to treatment in cancers.
Tom, go ahead.
And Mark, one thing that's really interesting is they're projecting with the aging of our population that one in two men are going to face cancer in their lifetime and one in three women. And we're looking at 14 million survivors currently in the United States. So it is incredibly prevalent because I think we've shifted the odds a little bit because of the aging of the population. It's now people are not automatically dying from heart attacks when they're 55 or 60, but going on, thankfully, to live until their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and therefore developing cancer.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. John, in terms of this documentary, is there anything that strikes you as being particularly effective that's coming out of it?
Well, I think the next century is going to be characterized by molecular medicine. That drug development for treatment of cancer has completely changed in the last 10 years, particularly with the introduction of agents such as Gleevec. In the past, the way drugs were developed to treat cancer and many other diseases, it was basically folk medicine. It was a hit and miss. We've actually dissected the signaling in cells, the pathways that tell cancer cells to grow, and people can actually sit before a computer in a laboratory and design a drug they know will inhibit the growth of the tumor by attacking or blocking that signaling or that pathway. So it's opened up a whole new world. Another area that's actually exploded in the last 5 or 10 years has been immunotherapy. There are now treatments that, rather than directly attacking the cancer, rev up the body's immune system to seek out the cancer cells and destroy them. And a number of these have actually been approved by the FDA in the last 2, 3, 4 years. Again, a whole new world.
Rebecca, what about in the area of radiology? What kinds of advances and new things have we seen there in treating cancer?
There have been really tremendous advances over the years. Sort of the mainstay of imaging and cancer diagnosis and treatment depends a little bit upon what area of the body the cancer is located in. But our main tools are mammography, ultrasound, CT scanning, MRI scanning, and PET scanning. And CT scan has been available since the early 70s, but there have, even in that technique, there have been tremendous advances in the quality and speed. With the current generation scanners, most CT scans now are performed in less than a minute. So the comfort level for a patient who's in pain has really improved because the scans are shorter. There have been some advances in MR technology as well. We now do techniques called MR spectroscopy and perfusion imaging, which actually look not at just the anatomy, but also at physiologic imaging and metabolic imaging.
Tom, are we doing a better job these days of catching cancer in earlier stages?
It depends on which cancer, Mark. So some cancers, clearly, we're making a diagnosis at earlier stages, and that's been a several-pronged approach, one of them being education of the public about early warning signs, those types of things. That's made a big difference in some cancers. Other areas, it has been imaging, where the imaging is so much better. And it, as we were just talking about, with this concept of dynamic imaging, where you put the structure along with the physiology at the same time, such as you do with a PET scan, looking for areas that have a faster metabolism of the glucose compound, we can see things that we couldn't otherwise see. And then, of course, the molecular genetic screening, where we can now look for the proclivity for developing cancer and even prevent that cancer in the first place. So all those have combined to help us diagnose the disease earlier.
Let me just chime in that one of the areas that a major advance has occurred in the last five or 7 years has been in terms of early detection of lung cancer. Again, the CT scanners have gotten so fast and so good, we can detect abnormalities in the lung now down to around 2 to 3 millimeters in size. Now, no tumor that's 2 to 3 millimeters will kill anybody. And not every little thing we see is a tumor, but we can actually very safely observe these things. And if they change or grow, we can catch them early. And as a result of the National Lung Screening Study, which was published 2 years ago, it was shown that patients who are at risk for lung cancer because they've smoked within the last 15 years, and smoked more than a certain amount or in a certain age group, we can actually lower the death rate for lung cancer in this group by doing yearly low-dose CT scans, very similar to screening mammographies.
Rebecca, what do you think, with the Ken Burns documentary, what do you think about tackling such an in-depth, multifaceted subject in 6 hours?
Well, it is a lot to cover in 6 hours. I've obviously not seen the whole 6 hour series, but I was impressed with the approach from the excerpts that we saw, because he seems to roll into one documentary a historical perspective, the progress of diagnosis and treatment over decades. He involves the physician perspective. And more importantly, he involves the perspective of the patient and the family, because I think we have to stay focused on the fact that we're not just treating a disease, but we're treating a patient and involving their family and their treatment.
Tom, what do you think of tackling such a complicated subject in 6 hours?
Well, if anyone could do it, it's Ken Burns, who, as you know, is a masterful documentary person and has a track record with the Civil War as well as baseball, and has done a great job with both of those. And from the excerpts I've seen, it's really masterfully done with very much the human element, which I think is important, that Becky alluded to. Bringing that into it has, I think, made a big difference. It's not just a lot of science and a lot of facts. There's enough there, I think, to keep someone who has that interest enticed, but there's so much more of the human story that I think makes this so much must see.
John, why do you think people should watch this documentary?
I think it is actually quite detailed and paints a very even-handed picture of where we are with the diagnosis, the treatment, and where we're going in terms of cancer. One of the things I've always found as a physician is that when I watch things that are produced for the public, I'm always left with the sense they've really sort of short-cheated the subject. When the excerpts I've seen of this, it's been a very complete discussion of many, many issues at the patient level, the doctor level, the medical economic level. I thought it was outstanding.
Rebecca, how do documentaries like this and the book that it's based on, how do they help in the battle against cancer?
Well, I think they help by putting information out there to the public so people have a greater awareness of possible treatment methods, possible diagnoses methods, and maybe allay some of their fears. Maybe a patient or a person may have some symptoms that they're concerned about, but maybe are afraid to seek a workup or treatment. And I think this type of documentary that really is very detailed and covers all the facets may allay their fears and urge some people to seek help for problems that they may have.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking about the new Ken Burns production about cancer, and joining us this afternoon are Dr. Rebecca Cornelius, Dr. John Morris, and Dr. Thomas Herzog from the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Were there any parts of this documentary, I know you haven't seen the whole thing, but was there anything in it that really hit home with any of you, Tom?
Yeah, I think what struck me was the whole saga with that Dr. Bernie Fisher went through, who was a surgeon at the University of Pittsburgh. And he was looking at this concept of doing less radical surgery on the breast. And it had been dogma for years that everyone needed, from Halstead's time, that everyone needed a radical mastectomy. And he challenged that. And it was interesting to see the political fallout that came with that as well. And as we know, many pioneers in science are often ridiculed originally. And it turned out that he was absolutely right. So I thought it was somewhat heroic in terms of the political heat that he took in terms of coming up with the fact that he was able to save women their breast, in essence.
John, was there anything that you saw that really struck you?
Yes, I found the section on the chimeric T cell therapy that Carl June was doing at the University of Pennsylvania. They had a young girl, very young, who was diagnosed with acute leukemia, who had kept slipping out of remission, and they couldn't even get it a bone marrow transplant, and it looked very bleak for her. And this is a very exciting new therapy where you can actually take T cells, these are the cancer-fighting cells of the immune system, and reprogram them to recognize that patient's tumor and attack them. And the story sort of kept you at the edge of your seat because she had a very severe reaction to the therapy, and they didn't think she was going to make it. And then sort of out of left field, they found this drug that blocked the severe reaction. The drug was on the market for a completely different disease, different reason, and they gave it to her and saved her life from the reaction, and the T-cell therapy actually put her into remission. She's been in remission for 2 years.
Is that a common experience, John, that the cancer is really, it's unique in how it affects people? Is it common for something like that to happen, where you just out of the clear blue sky find something that, hey, this works, that maybe you weren't expecting?
It happens, but it doesn't happen that often or nearly enough.
Rebecca, what about you and what you've been able to pick up and gather on the documentary? What were there any particular stories that struck home with you?
The story about the evolution of breast cancer treatment struck home with me, mostly because I've had a personal experience with breast cancer. So, you know, that I sort of knew all the background of that story, but it was interesting to hear it in this light. And, you know, fortunately, without spending too much time just talking about myself, 9 years ago, I underwent breast cancer treatment for fortunately very early stage disease, but very extensive disease. And I did have bilateral mastectomies, so they're not the radical mastectomies that were talked about in the documentary.
Now, the creators are hoping that this sparks a national conversation on the importance of cancer research. Where do things stand these days on funding for research, John?
Actually, funding has been flat for the last 5 or 6 years. And when I say flat, you need to take into account that there's a biomedical inflation rate, so there's actually been a decrease. If the NIH budget is approved at below that inflation rate, actually less money is being spent every year.
Rebecca, going back to what you experienced personally when you dealt with cancer, was it different for you because you were a doctor and you knew far more about that than your typical patient would?
Well, I'm sure in some ways it was different because I did have more knowledge than the typical patient. But, you know, I think I went through some of the same things that a non-physician patient would go through. Interesting. It was, you know, the whole process from my initial symptoms, diagnosis, and all my different surgeries and reconstruction to the end of the process took about a year. So I think I developed an appreciation for some of the fatigue that patients go through. I found myself just very tired of having tests done and going to doctor's appointments. So I developed a whole new appreciation for the patient perspective of, you know, going through a cancer treatment.
Rebecca, is that one of the things that makes cancer so dreaded? I mean, you know, first off, you know it's a deadly disease, but potentially deadly. But when you're going through it, there's just so much you have to go through to overcome it. The fatigue's a big part of it, isn't it?
Right, right. It really is. And yeah, a lot of it is, you know, the worrying and until you get through the initial stages. And as I said, for me, it was fortunate because it was very early stage. So I maybe had less worry than some people. But the whole process is time intensive and fatiguing. And you worry about your family. I had a young son at the time, 12 years old. So my big concerns were surviving to take care of him.
Yeah, I think a big part of the cancer management for us is to really look deeper into this, because the fatigue factor is so multifactorial, and it can go into the treatments that we give. It can go into the stress from having the disease. It can go into the stress externally from economic forces. What's this going to do with my ability to work? What is this going to do in terms of the cost of the medicines I'm taking? And what does this do to my sleep pattern? And there's so many things that really figure in on this. And it's at the exact time that you need your immune system to be at its best that you're damaging it with the stress and everything else. So it makes it really difficult.
John, I think you were talking earlier about the progress that we've made in the area of immunotherapy. Is
yes.
that correct? Well, what exactly is going on with that?
Well, there are several approaches. So one of the exciting things that's been recognized is that the immune system has off switches. And these are normal and very functional. I'm sure everybody that's listening to this has had the flu at one time or another. And a lot of that terrible feeling you have when the flu is your immune system revving up to fight the flu virus. And certainly after you get over the infection, you need to shut it off. And there are these switches that shut it off. And it turns out it's been recognized that many cancers actually hijack these off switches and keep the immune system off from attacking. So one of the most exciting things that's happened, there are now a number of drugs that attach to these off switches and keep them from being thrown. There's actually two drugs that are approved now, and they are approved to treat a melanoma, the pigmented skin cancer, and another one just got approved to treat a certain type of lung cancer.
That's amazing. And we keep taking steps like this all the time. Is that why there was a doctor in one of the documentaries about the documentary, so to speak, who made the comment that I know if I fail, my successors are going to succeed, that they're right behind me and they're going to figure something out.
And I'm one of the successors of that doctor. I was trained by him. And yes, and I've known Dr. Holland for almost 30 years, more than 30 years. And he always was very forward looking. And he actually wrote an editorial in 1962. And in that editorial, he stated that I want to live to see cancer converted from an acutely fatal disease to a chronic disease like arthritis or asthma. And he felt that would be the first step. And we're seeing that now as we have more and more survivors, and even people they still have cancer, are living much longer and living with better quality of life.
John, you have a lot of pressure on you, having been the successor now.
One of many successes of Dr. Holland. Yeah.
Tom, you know, speaking of in 1971, I think President Nixon launched a war on cancer, so to speak. And what kind of progress have we made since 1971?
Well, it's amazing how far we've come in terms of the understanding, the biology and the underpinnings of cancer since 1971. I don't know if we even knew what we were declaring war on in essence at that point, because I think a lot of people had autochronized from the moonshot experience and said that, you know, it's just step by step. We'll be able to solve this very quickly as long as we focus on this. And what we found was it was just so much more complex than what anyone had dreamed of. And it's really been in the most recent years that we've been able to manage this large amounts of data called big data with these computer systems that can look at multiple changes in genes and so forth at the same time, because there's multiple changes, but which of these are driver mutations, which of these are important? And we're now coming to an understanding for many cancers, not all cancers, but for many cancers. And I think we've come a long way in terms of the biology. In terms of converting that into survival, we've seen some dramatic effects in some cancers. Overall, for solid tumors, we've seen modest improvements, but we still have a long way to go.
How much do we know about cancer compared to how much we don't know, John?
Oh, there's still a lot we don't know. And we're surprised every month, every year, we're surprised with new revelations. For example, something that's become apparent to us is it was thought, as Tom pointed out, you have these common or driver mutations in the tumor. It's not that simple. There was a very interesting study that was published last year, the year before, where a group of investigators looked at patients with kidney cancer, and they did biopsies of different parts of the same tumor as well as metastases. And it turned out that each part had a different genetic pattern, that it wasn't as simple as the whole tumor, its metastases are identical, they're not. You're dealing actually what appears to be different diseases in each one, which makes the treatment more complex.
And that's part of the problem. I think one of the points when I was reading about President Nixon declaring war on cancer, one of the things they pointed out was the complexity of the disease. There have been all these different theories, some that viruses cause it and then genetics, and we've kind of gone this full circle, mm-hmm. haven't we, in trying to figure out what causes cancer.
Yes, that's true. And yes, viruses cause certain types of cancer. Many of the cancers that Dr. Herzog works with, cervical cancer, is well known to be caused by human papillomavirus. There are other viruses that cause lymphoma and a variety of other tumors.
You know, oncology, it has to be a tough field to be in, because so many of your patients, they face this potential deadly disease. Ken Burns is delivering a rather optimistic viewpoint in this documentary, and he says there's a sense that we're on the cusp of something significant. Do each of you have that same sense, and why? Rebecca, do you feel optimistic about eventually we're going to find a cure for this?
Well, I do feel optimistic that we will become better at curing some of these processes. They're all such different in different parts of the body and different types of tumor. They're really almost completely different disease processes. But as we we talked about some of the improvements in imaging for cancer detection and for follow-up, but there are even newer methods on the horizon. PET CT currently depends on an agent which monitors glucose metabolism, but there are trials going on looking at protein metabolism agents, amino acid metabolism, cellular proliferation. There are some MR techniques that are being developed, elastography, which looks at the stiffness of tissue to help differentiate tumor from non-tumor tissue. So I think as we continue to make advances in detection and treatment, I am optimistic that we will have greater cure rates.
John, what about you?
Yes, I'm very optimistic. I've seen things change even in my career, where diseases that were 100% fatal, very short survival, now have longer survivals, and more patients are being cured and living with cancer. When I see my lung cancer patients, many of them are devastated, and I have to paint a fair picture to them about what we can do and we can't do. But I also explain to them that you don't come to me for what I can't do for you, but what I can do for you. And we always try and get the best result, and the best result is a cure, if possible.
Tom?
Yeah, I remain optimistic as well, largely due to the massive explosion of information in terms of molecular genomics and that big data processing that we've been talking about. I do want to stress, though, that we need continued investment in this in terms of research. I've never seen an area that has paid greater dividends than researching cancer. It's an area that is underfunded, frankly. The other area that I would say gives me optimism is the fact that we've been able to manage symptoms better than we've ever been able to do in the past as well. So while people may do just a little bit better, they're doing so with a much better quality of life and with much less in the way of long-term side effects, which is really helpful.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because we talked with the folks from the UC Cancer Survivorship Center a couple of weeks ago. And is the need for that new medical specialty, does that show us how much progress we've made in dealing with cancer?
Absolutely. Isn't it great now that we're focusing on the side effects of treatment 10 years later instead of worrying about if you're going to be alive in 10 years?
Thank you, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Rebecca Cornelius, Dr. John Morris, and Dr. Thomas Herzog from the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. And coming up, what you get when you combine popular classics with incredible acrobatics. We'll take a look at Cirque Mechanics. It's coming up in Cincinnati later this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.